Russell Shorto has given us the honor to join us in conversation. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, Mr. Shorto. Mary Chase, Descartes' bones give us. And one of the many things in the early part, as you say, the man who died, mm-hmm. before you follow his, literally follow his bones through 300 years, more, a lot of years, the idea that he started thinking about our biology, that mm-hmm. it was his mm-hmm. body, the mm-hmm. embodiment part, and now all these hundreds of years later, that science is beginning maybe to be saying, yes, biology matters. Well, you have to have Darwin in there to help open up the mm-hmm, conversation mm-hmm, mm-hmm. over these centuries, and it gets us to the question Bill was putting forth about where does the unpredictability of the physical come in this?
Yeah. Well, one of the, to me, let me say this, when I hit on this notion of, you know, using Descartes' bones as a metaphor, hoping that there would be substance to it, of course, and you spend more time in it and you see one way in which it is indeed a metaphor, and then you encounter other sort of ironic aspects to it, one of which is Descartes is seen as the ultimate abstract thinker whose name, I mean, Cartesian dualism, Cartesian coordinates, I mean, these are ultimate abstractions. But he himself, in his lifetime, was a medicine man. That's what he saw himself as. And he was going to employ these new methods of exploring the natural world on the body to unlock disease, and in particular on his own body, because he was a sickly child. He was told he was going to die. He then left home, went to school, and started to get better, maybe because he left home. Then he decided that this would be his life's work, to focus on the body and how to solve this riddle. And you see in that, I think, on the one hand, this you see the exuberance and the power that was felt in this new approach. But you also see the naive aspect of it. I mean, they believed that you could unlock the secrets of the body and cure disease, but they were a little naive and sort of, yeah, I mean, he thought, you know, people would write to him and he'd say, give me a few years, and, you know, then I'll kind of flip the switch. And people thought, actually, he thought he would increase the human lifespan to centuries. So much so that after he died in Sweden, some people refused to believe it and wrote saying, well, wait a second, he was going to, you know, and people would write to him saying, have you, you know, I've got this problem, have you found the answer yet? And he would say no, but then he would give perfectly wise advice, which was typically get a lot of rest, think positively. I mean, it was good advice, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't quite what they were looking for.
In that moment, when you talk about Newton and when you talk about the milieu in which he was, mm-hmm. and I think milieu is the right mm-hmm. term, we had begun to think about the human body as a machine. Mm-hmm. Find what's broken.
Exactly, that's how they thought of it, as a machine. So the nice irony here is that because his own body, his own flesh and bones, were the root of his work, that's where he started. I mean, the idea of looking at Descartes' bones after death as well is just a very nice way to, because, and it's not accidental, because in that time, they looked at the body as a machine. They had this awareness of the body as sort of half of the equation of reality, the division of reality, and then how that plays out over the centuries in the development of science and development of medicine is that also becomes one half of the picture.
In the interest of getting past this very boring discussion and find something we can disagree about. We spent some time this weekend with friends who are Tibetan Buddhists. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at a book that Paul Ekman has written with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And Ekman's core work is on emotions. Mm-hmm. And his work with the Dalai Lama is about emotions. And it seems to me that there, in addition to the Trinity you lay out, mm-hmm. there's this other condition in the world that is this form of spirituality, not to say religion, mm-hmm. that is the Buddhist perspective, mm-hmm. that rigorously tries to unite reason with compassion. Mm-hmm. And they've been at it for several hundred years. And it seems to me that as we talk about the challenges mm-hmm. that we face, that the opportunity we now have to reach out and access the various traditions that have been employed around about the world, that there's help available. Mm-hmm. There are insights available that have not historically been normally.
Sure, I'm afraid I'm not going to disagree with you there. But I would just say that I think a lot of people from different Christian denominations would say that they too try to unite reason and transcendence and find ways for those things to coexist, or would argue that in fact they do coexist. We just we are imperfect in our way of understanding it.
Yes, and the difference, I think, is the Buddhists do all the above without having a deity, mm-hmm. which is a distinguishing characteristic. Mm-hmm. You can make of that what mm-hmm. you will, but I only mention that one because I have hold these people in very high regard. But secondly, it's another way, even if you don't buy it, and this is not a proselytizing religion, the Buddhist mm-hmm. Or not. It provides what you've provided in your book, which is another way of examining the reality that we find ourselves amidst. Mm-hmm. What you were saying earlier, three mm-hmm. biographies of Reagan, mm-hmm. and each one's going to look different. Mm-hmm. And again, we have those tools now available to us that simply hadn't been available before.
And do you think that those tools were not available before?
I think they were not routinely accessible to us.
Tools specifically meaning...
I mean, access to the thinking,
to the
thinking that comes out of cultural traditions mm-hmm. that are alien to us. Mm-hmm. We have been ethnocentric, mm-hmm. Centric in lots of different ways, mm-hmm. species centric. Mm-hmm. We have friends who are bonobos, mm-hmm. Which presents another worldview. Mm-hmm. Franz de Waal would argue that morality and ethics comes out of what is necessary for animals to live together, mm-hmm. for community,
social animals
to live together. So there's this richness out there, and a lot of it, I think, was not known and was not knowable, because a lot of this is new information. Mm-hmm. The religious tradition is sort of cultural isolation, yeah. but there's also just an increase in the amount of knowledge, and I don't think this is just the progressivist fallacy.
But you're talking about spiritual knowledge rising above religious context and informing other...
I'm saying that is something that is available for us to consider mm-hmm. in ways that we probably would not have considered it mm-hmm. before.
That presupposes a society that is willing to consider such things.
Which I assume is part of your argument.
Well, and the problem is that I would postulate that a society that has gone through the centuries of Descartes' bones, a society that has experienced the Enlightenment, experience the flaws of it, of thinking that reason alone can solve problems, is one that is on the verge of being able to access these traditions. Whereas a society that has not done that may not be there.
We'll be back in a moment to figure out where we are.
We'll vote,
not necessarily, but there are three of us, so we won't have an excluded. Right. It'll be with us when we return for a few more minutes with Russell Shorto.